This is BPNRadio.com, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. A member of the Breakout Prayer Network. Let's pray, America.
Hey, this is Dale Gentry welcoming you to another classic interview here on BPNRadio.com. For over 3 years, I've had many special guests here on BPNRadio.com. So during the following hour, we're going to replay one of those great interviews. Please remember that the following interview has been pre-recorded and may include some dated content. However, well, you're going to be blessed by another one of our special classic interviews here on BPNRadio.com. Good to have you listening on BPN Radio, on the air here now in our fourth year of broadcasting on BPNRadio.com. I want to welcome back a man who's been on before, Dr. Jim Burkett, my special guest here today. And Jim Burkett has been my friend for 32 years. I started ministering for him in 1986 when he was the pastor of Hillcrest Baptist Church in Stillwater, Oklahoma. And during that season, Jim Burkett opened a lot of doors for Gene and I to minister in Southern Baptist churches across America. Jim accepted Christ watching a Billy Graham TV crusade. He's been in ministry since 1964. That's a long time. He served as a senior pastor for over 40 years, served 34 years pastoring in university communities, initiated an interdenominational ministry to pastors and their families entitled Shepherd's Fellowship, which Gene and I were a part of. He's been an adjunct professor in theology at Oklahoma Wesleyan University and Truist McConnell University in Georgia. He served as an adjunct scholar for the Josh McDowell Institute, founder and director of the Oklahoma School of Apologetics and Practical Theology. He conducts apologetics on fire conferences and churches, conferences, and camps. He has developed 5 curriculum studies on apologetics. Welcome, Dr. Jim Burkett. What is apologetics and how can apologetics help save the millennial generation? Good to have you on BPNRadio.com today.
Well, thank you, Dale. I tell you what, you mentioned you and Gene coming to Hillcrest Baptist back in the 80s, and boy, the memories really go back. I remember how God really worked in such a phenomenal way, and it's really tremendous, and God is still working there. So,
yes, He is.
What is apologetics? That was your question. Yeah. That's the one question a lot of folks ask. It does not mean saying to people, well, would you please forgive me because I believe in God, I'm a follower of Jesus. But apologetics is more of a technical term, and it comes from a Greek word, apologia. Some people define it as defending the faith. Here's the way I like to define it. Apologetics is presenting the rational reasons why Christianity is true. And we see that in both the Old and New Testaments, Jesus was an apologist. And I know that sounds rather interesting, but he really was. For example, in Acts 1:3, for you folks that are listening, if you look in verse 3, you'll notice it says, after his passion, for 40 days, Jesus presented himself alive with many convincing proofs, teaching about the kingdom of heaven. Now, here's what's interesting. That word convincing proofs in the Greek, Dale, that word is technarios, and every time that word is used in the Greek, whether it's the New Testament or whether it's a non-biblical source from antiquity, it always means irrefutable proofs that are absolutely demonstrated. Hmm. So that's why you look at Jesus and what did he do for 40 days? I mean, here's this formerly brutally tortured rabbi. Now he's a resurrected rabbi. And what does he do for 40 days? He demonstrates that he's alive to his followers. And it's interesting that he appears to individuals, groups of 2, 5, 7, 11, and more than 500 people at one time. So that's why I like to say that Christianity is a factual-based faith, because our faith is based upon the facts that God has given, whether they be in the heavens or whether they be in history or science. I hope that makes sense, what I just said.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's a great introduction. So many people don't know what apologetics mean, but how is that going to save the millennial generation? I mean, we're having such an incredible breaking away from the local church. How's apologetics going to help in saving the millennial generation, our sons and daughters, our junior high, high school, and college students?
That's a really great question. As a matter of fact, there's a sociologist by the name of Bradley Wright with the University of Connecticut, and Dale, he and his team decided they were going to interview the young adults who claimed to be, who were formerly Christians. They called themselves deconverted former Christians. And they wanted to find out, why did they leave not just the church, but why did they leave Christianity? And he said our team expected the normal things, like they didn't agree with maybe a political statement, or they didn't agree with leadership, or they didn't agree with that direction. But they were surprised to find out that the number one reason why that these young adults left Christianity was they would go to their church leaders and they would ask them questions about the relationship of Christianity to science or Christianity to history or cultural issues. And it's almost like there was a script that the church leaders had memorized. They basically say, I really don't know. You just have faith. And so after about the fourth or fifth time, these young adults would say, well, since nobody could answer the questions to my doubts, I just assumed Christianity didn't have any answers. And so that's basically the gist of it. We're losing, depending on what survey you read, anywhere from 65% to 92% mm-hmm. of church kids. Mm-hmm. They're leaving the Christian faith. And here's what's interesting. Even though the majority of their reasons for leaving are intellectual, the questions that they raise can all be answerable. And so here's what we're finding out. In the midst of all this negative stuff, we found one bright light. And here's what they found out. One survey indicated, this was with the Next Generation Project, where they interviewed 130,000 millennials. And they found out that those church leaders who understood the gravity of the forces and influences that are removing and just causing Christians, Christian young people to doubt their faith, to leave Christianity. They mm-hmm. found out that if those church leaders equip their young people to think logically through a Christian worldview based on the facts presented by Christian apologetics, they don't lose 80%, but 80% plus will go on for God and go on to serve the Lord past the age of 23.
Well, that is very interesting, because I'm concerned, and I know that a lot of pastors are very concerned about what is happening today. And it appears that on the college and university campuses, and I know that you have been involved with university students, they are beginning to liberal colleges and universities. They're attacking the Bible, starting with the Genesis chapter 1.
Oh yeah, yeah, and this, you brought up a very good point. And again, that's something that I believe just in the last 5 years that not only pastors but even parents are beginning to realize that the college situation, unless you're a young person, has been equipped to be able to answer those questions for himself, first of all, then he's going to be overwhelmed. It'll be like a tsunami. One of our Christian executives here in the state of Oklahoma wrote a very stirring column, and he said, for us to send our kids to the universities today without preparing them to be able to understand why they believe what they believe is like just sending them to the slaughter, because mm-hmm. they'll be under the influence of godless professors. For example, there's one professor, he makes no bones about it. He's a very prominent atheistic professor. And he made this comment. He said, we try to arrange things so that students who enter as bigoted, homophobic, religious fundamentalists will leave college with views more like our own. We do our best to convince these students of the benefits of secularization. So we're going to go right on trying to discredit you in the eyes of your children, trying to strip your fundamentalist religious community of dignity, mm-hmm. trying to make your views seem silly rather than discussable. And so when I read that to parents, all of a sudden it heightens the whole level. Now, I'm not saying that all university professors have that attitude, but one survey indicated that 25% of university professors today see themselves as atheists, and many see themselves as very aggressive atheist. And then the survey also asked, which subgroup, which student subgroup do you have the most negative connotations towards? Mormons came in at number two at a little over 30%. Mm-hmm. University professors say I have negative connotation. The number one was evangelical Christian students at over 50%. And so you take that, you take all the pressure that's coming from the immoral society we have, plus, oh my goodness, Dale, the absolute translunacy issues that are on our campus. Mm-hmm. I mean, who would have thought even 10 years ago that we'd even have to have definitions that we're having to have before? So, but here's what we're finding out. We're finding out that millennials, rather than they're wanting to sit on the sidelines, when they're exposed to the truth, and particularly those just younger than Generation Z, we find out, and the other stats are indicating this as well, we find out that there is a great openness, because I can be speaking and I can just share with students and say, now, if you don't believe me when I say that the Bible has been historically verified as being the most accurate document from ancient history, I tell them, go ahead and check this website, that website, Google it, and so on and so forth. And what it does is it all of a sudden gives them the confidence, well, maybe everything I've heard about Christianity is not true. It's like this happened 3 years ago. A 15-year-old high school kid here in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, went to an apologetics conference with his father. And his dad thought, well, this would be a good time for my son and myself to spend the weekend while I listen to these scholars. And he thought, well, my son will probably just sit next to me and play on his iPhone. But instead, 5 minutes into the conference, my friend looks over, and there's his son taking copious notes. He wants to buy all the books of all the authors. He said, I want you to know, my son is not passionate about anything, not even girls or food. And he said, here all of a sudden, he's just digesting this stuff. Wow. Dale, God so worked in that young man's life that he started an apologetics club at one of the high schools here, averaging 25 or 30 plus students, sometimes 40, and all backgrounds. So I really believe that's one of the components. And then if I could mention the second one, and that is that we've got to have and initiate strong, authentic relationships with this age group.
Yeah, I agree, Jim. Talking with Dr. Jim Burkett here today. You know, I have a major concern. I know that we share this concerning our youth today. I believe that many of our, probably most of our young people, particularly those in evangelical churches, charismatic churches, have been taught spiritual principles, but we've probably gone lacking in teaching them doctrinal foundations that they can take into their college and universities. And I mean, as you were, you've served as a senior pastor for over 40 years, and how did you get involved? There's so many different directions that you could take because of your seniority in ministry. How did you get involved in apologetics?
Well, for me, it's a personal story because, to be honest with you, I received the Lord watching Billy Graham on TV. I was not raised in a Christian family, and so I was really naive or ignorant in the things of the church and Christianity. And so when the Lord called me into ministry, which was as much a shock to me as I think as a lot of my friends, I went to a Christian university, and I really thought everyone's passion for Christ would be the same as mine. But even though I was speaking every weekend in revivals and conferences, it seemed like, I had two or three professors they probably would not be hired today, but they were making statements that instead of building up your faith, undermined your faith. Mm-hmm. And so it brought me to a crisis of belief when I was a junior in college in 1968. And Dale, I really got to the point where I just, you know, like Josh McDowell says, the heart cannot rejoice in what the mind doubts. Mm-hmm. So I really, I just had to pray, God, if you're really there, you know, and I don't know if I'm just talking to air, but if you're really there, and if Jesus really is your son and not just a mere man, give me an intellectual stake that is immovable. And so I really meant that, because if, and this is March 6, 1968, so if Jesus didn't answer that prayer and I didn't find any evidence that God really did exist to deal with my doubts, then I'm changing my major, I'm transferring to another college. Two nights later, I'm in the university library. I'm in the university library because I have a term paper due the next morning, and I thought I should start on it, which I don't know if you have any workshops on procrastination, Dale, but I had that moving in my life at that time.
Yeah.
But I'm walking through the periodical section, and I see this magazine, and it says Christianity Today, and it mentions that there's an article inside on the historical evidence for the resurrection of Jesus. And I thought, oh boy, it's probably written by either a preacher or a missionary or a theologian. Probably not that significant. But Dale, I went over and I picked up the article and I started reading it, and I was stunned to find out it wasn't written by a pastor, wasn't written by a missionary, wasn't written by a theologian. It was written by the dean of the law college at the University of London, who was also the director of advanced legal studies and also considered one of the world's leading authorities on Islamic law. And then I found out that it really wasn't an article, but it was really a transcription of an address that he made at the Harvard University Christian Fellowship. And I thought, oh my goodness. So he said basically this. He said, what I'm going to do is we're going to take the evidence from archaeology and history and science, and we're going to apply this to the betrayal, the trial, the execution, and the purported resurrection of Jesus, and we're going to see where the evidence leads us. And he says, now I'm going to act like an attorney, and we're going to examine the evidence. Well, Dale, I tell you what, by the time I finished the article, basically what Dr. Anderson said, he said the only conclusion on the basis of evidence that any rational man or woman can come to is that somehow, some way, Jesus of Nazareth came back from the dead in history. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was like an intellectual nail that established my faith. I didn't know that was apologetics, but I tell people apologetics did not save me. Jesus saves me, but apologetics, quote unquote, save my faith in Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so nowadays, I don't see how any Christian can really survive the way they need to. If I could just mention this, there's a whole new ministry that has developed in the last 5 years on college campuses called Ratio Christi, R-A-T-I-O, Christi, and it's the word Christ with an I at the end, which means the mind of Christ. And these are Christian chapters that are based on evangelism and apologetics, where kids, where young people can be equipped to be able to go into these to their classes and the atmosphere and encourage each other and be able to present rational reasons for their faith.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, apologetics was so personal. And I think that's one of the reasons why I know it's one of the reasons why I have such a passion about it.
Yeah, well, I know that you're on the right path, and I wanted to have you back, Jim, because I know that so many parents are wringing their hands because of what they see happening to their sons and daughters, not just sons and daughters that have gone off to the university, but sons and daughters that are being challenged even in middle school, junior high school, and they're wondering, how can I save my son? How can I save my daughter? Our greatest investment in life has to be our sons and daughters, and so Satan is attacking the family, because I know that Abraham Lincoln said, strong families make a strong nation, weak families make a weak nation. And even though we have a Christian now administration in the White House, which I'm very thankful for, there is still continuing this moral decline in our nation, and the major inroads, I believe, is our youth. And so, you know, when you use the word deconverted, that that sends a major alarm signal to me. Our young people, our sons and daughters, our own children, our flesh and blood, they get converted, and then Satan goes about to deconvert them. And so the church is losing people, young people, out of the congregation. Many of them are still in junior high, high school, but they're already gone. They may be attending church, but according to their parents' rules and regulations, but they're sitting there maybe with their iPad, or they're listening to some music in their earbuds, or they're thinking, and they have turned against what they were converted to. Now there is a deconversion taking place. And I know it's alarming, but I believe it can be addressed. I believe that the church, and not just the church, the local church, but also fathers and mothers, they need to get involved in these foundational principles that are being taught in the school of apologetics. And of course, I know that you now are leading a school of apologetics, and you are doing these conferences and seminars. And I know that you have great passion, and I share that passion because I see the decline. That is happening in the faith of our sons and daughters. So, I'm sounding an alarm. Am I too much of an alarmist, Jim?
No, as a matter of fact, there was one Christian leader who said he even made a statement. He said, "If some of you think I'm sounding like an alarmist, he said, good, because the situation is that desperate." And Dale, you mentioned about as young as middle school and even elementary school and what they're facing. A study by Brent Beamer really confirms what you're saying. Not only did they want to find out why church kids were leaving Christianity, but they were shocked to find out when they were leaving in their heart and mind. Mm-hmm. And they found this out. They found out that church kids, 45% of them will leave the Christian faith in their mind and their heart by the time they reach the ninth grade. Mm. Another 40% plus will leave the Christian faith by the time that they're seniors. So when you talk about, and that's where I feel like we're too late if we're trying to catch them in their senior year of high school.
Yeah.
No, it's already, I say it's too late. It's never too late. But what I mean is, the damage has been done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also brought up something else that I just absolutely agree with. The School of Apologetics, we're looking at three or four different fronts. Like, we're developing right now a workshop, which we gave at a church in Midwest City, in Moore, Oklahoma. And it was basically entitled Rescuing the Lost Generations and Restoring the Prodigals. And it was, what are the strategic steps that parents and grandparents can take to reclaim their sons and daughters and grandchildren for Christ? And most parents and grandparents, and you've hit on something that's absolutely a tragedy. And that is that, it's like, and the story can be repeated multiple times, thousands of times. Here's a good family. They've gone to church. They've taken their kids. Mm-hmm. They serve the Lord. They tithe. They held a position in the church. Their kids have even gone on mission trips, so forth and so on. And I remember one pastor called me, and his daughter had only been in college as a freshman for 90 days, just 90 days. And she called and basically said, I just can't believe what you all have taught me. I mean, it devastated them, and she went into a lifestyle that was very promiscuous and so on and so forth. So are there things that parents can do and grandparents that can create an atmosphere where that son and daughter and that grandson and granddaughter can be put in the tractor beam of God's love and God's truth? And so that's what we're trying to see happen in the coming 12 months, going to strategic places in the United States and holding these conferences, and first of all for the parents and grandparents and church leaders, and then for the young adults, because I'm telling you, I'm not going to chase a rabbit, but it kind of illustrates what I'm talking about. There's a very prominent church where I held a course on apologetics, and one of the courses is called The Case for the Deity of Jesus, Who He Is and Why He Matters. And so here is a room full of about, I want to say, 80 plus adults, most 40s, 50s, a lot in 60s and 70s. But it was very interesting. On the last class, I asked, how has this meant anything to you? Has it built you up? And so a retired PhD in psychology, he held up his hand, he's a little teared up, and he said, listen, he said, I've been a Christian for over 40 plus years. I've been a member of this church almost that long. But he said, I have to ask the question, why have I never heard that Christianity is a factual faith? And he said, it's done two things. Number one, it's given me so much confidence that when I hear this stuff on TV or read it in the paper, I realize those folks haven't done their homework and that Christianity is true. Then there was a medical doctor, and he was supposed to have the reputation of being one of the most intellectual medical leaders in our city. And he made the comment. He said, you know, I received Jesus into my soul when I was 14. I was baptized when I was 14. But he said, after taking this class and understanding that Christianity is a factual faith, he says, I feel like my mind has been baptized. And so that's what we're trying to tell folks is, yes, we want our young people to have a heart for Jesus, but also a mind for Jesus, yeah. Because Matthew 22, Jesus said, you're to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and with all your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I hope that made sense,
yeah.
Dale.
Yeah, it does make sense. And I know that you are, you have the Oklahoma School for Apologetics and Practical Theology, and you're introducing apologetics, dealing with the big 10 questions of Christianity and the case for the Bible, the case, as you mentioned, for the deity of Jesus, establishing the Christian worldview to transform culture. This is not just for students, but it's also for parents and church leaders to understand where we're at. Why are we losing so many young people? Why is their faith being challenged? And so I know that you go into churches and do these conferences and to teach and to train parents, grandparents, and pastors and church leaders, as well as young people. I know you're doing an amazing work there, leading these apologetics on fire conferences that are designed to lead to equip pastors, Christian leaders, and believers and making the intellectual case for the factuality of the truth claims of biblical Christianity. And I know that your mission is to equip Christian leaders for the evangelization of our nation, the transformation of our culture through the body of Christ and the local church, through apologetics and based discipleship. And you know, this may be something a little bit new to so many Christians, but if we just realize what is taking place, what is happening, and the training, and train up a child in the way they should go. One translation says the way they must go, and that includes preparing them for adulthood, for education in the college and universities,
exactly.
And also high schools. And we know that the millennial generation, our young people, are facing not just challenges to their faith. Many of them are being taught about Islam. Islam is becoming widespread in America. So many young people are now turning to homosexual relationships. There's so much to happen to. There's so much happening to destroy the very moral fiber of our nation, and the belief that religion can include Christianity, can include Islam, can include whatever religion. So there's a lot of we're involved in a full frontal attack, and we need to look and see what is happening, what our sons and daughters are being taught. And, you know, it's not only happening in secular colleges and universities, but it's happening in middle school, junior high, high school, public schools all across America. Particularly, we have so many, we have a major listening audience in California. And, you know, I know the public school system in California, the California education system, is passing all kinds of these weird laws and just unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that, like, you hit the nail on the head. And one of the things that we start off with in all of our apologetics courses, regardless of whether it's introduction or 102, 103, or whatever, is that we really focus on definitions. And we say that there's about four or five key questions that every Christian ought to be able to answer. And the first one has to do with the definition, that is, does truth exist? And that's a big one in our culture. I mean, because we've got folks, and some are in the, not some, they're in the college setting, they're in the government, they're in the entertainment industry. And basically, they would say, well, truth is what you create. Truth is what your impressions are. Whereas the Bible teaches that truth is absolute.
Yeah.
It cannot be changed by your impressions or my impressions. Truth will be verified historically or scientifically. And that's why the science enterprise even began to grow. Second question, does God really exist? And people still are asking that. And Dale, I want to tell you something. When people begin to hear just the astounding proofs and evidences that God has given us, mm-hmm. and the number of scholars and the number of scientists that are coming to God. In the past 12 months, there have been three PhDs in astrophysics who've come to Christ as a result of their discipline, and they realize the universe and life is too complex to have happened by random chance.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get guys like Fritz Henry Schaefer III. He's a professor at University of Georgia. And Dale, this guy's been nominated for the Nobel Prize 5 times.
Wow.
His specialty is quantum chemistry. Don't ask me what that is, but it's very interesting. Here is one of the world's leading thinkers, and when I ask him, well, how did you become a Christian? And he starts laughing. He says, well, when I was on the faculty at Berkeley, which, as you know, is not Oral Roberts University or Oklahoma Baptist University. But long story short, he said, I kept bumping into Christian professors, and it shocked me. They were leaders in their field and worldwide known. And yet, every once in a while, I'd find one that really, really knew God and knew Christ. And I would ask him, well, how do you put the two together? And every one of them said, basically, he told me two things that came out. One was they all discovered from their field, whether that was biology, physics, whether that was astrophysics, whatever it might be, astronomy, they found out from their field that atheism did not answer the questions that they were discovering. And number two, there was no evidence for random chance creation. There was too much design. And then secondly, if there was a grand designer, what's his name? And they looked at Dr. Schaefer, and they said, Schaefer, I challenge you to try to disprove the resurrection of Jesus. And so he thought, well, hey, I can do that. I'm very analytical. Dale, it took him 2+ years. He did everything he could. He tried to analyze every perspective. And he said to me, I wasn't just convinced. I was compelled intellectually to realize that somehow, some way, Jesus Christ came back from the dead in history. And then he started laughing, and he said, Jim, you do know that anytime a dead man comes back from the dead, it places him in a class all by himself.
Yeah.
And so I said, yeah, I think that would put him in a class by himself. So
Wow.
anyway, but Dale, it's It's amazing. So does truth exist? Does God exist? Is the Bible historically reliable? Mm-hmm. Again, oh my goodness, archaeological and manuscript evidence. And then number four, do miracles happen? And I'm telling you, folks are blown away when they start looking at the incredible certified stories of where God has just done miraculous things. Mm-hmm. But if anything, I believe the church is in a tremendous time if we become equipped and we really allow the enabling empowerment of the Holy Spirit of God to lead us, to lead our mind, our hearts, our wills, and be sensitive to His leading. I believe we're in an incredible position for God to ignite not only revival in the church, but a great awakening in our nation. Yeah. I really do.
I believe that, Jim Burkett, Dr. Jim Burkett here. And in just a moment, we're going to talk about how churches can get in touch with you, how people can get your materials or what have you. We're going to take a break, and we're talking about truth, and truth, of course, veritas. Casting Crown is going to sing about the voice of truth, and I'll be back with more with Dr. Jim Burkett here in a couple, 3 minutes. Here's Casting Crowns.
Climb out of this boat and then onto the crashing waves, to step out of my comfort zone into the realm of the unknown, where Jesus is and He's holding out His hand. But the waves are calling out my name and they laugh at me, reminding me of all the times I've tried before and failed. The waves, they keep on telling me time and time again, boy, you never win, you never win. But the voice of truth tells me a different story. The voice of truth says do not be afraid. And the voice of truth says this is for my glory. Out of all the voices calling out to me, I will choose to listen and believe the voice of truth. Oh, what I would do to have the kind of strength it takes to stand before a giant, with just a sling and a stone, surrounded by the sound of a thousand warriors shaking in their armor, wishing they'd have had the strength to stand. But the giant's calling out my name and he laughs at me, reminding me of all the times I tried before and failed. The giant keeps on telling me time and time again, boy, you'll never win, you'll never win. But the voice of truth tells me a different story. The voice of truth says do not be afraid. And the voice of truth says this is for my glory.
Soar with the wings of evil.
listen and believe the voice of truth. I will listen and believe, 'cause Jesus, you are the voice of truth. And I will listen to
okay, there you have Casting Crowns here on BPNRadio.com. Welcome to our Monday broadcast here on BPNRadio.com. Dale Gentry, your host here, and this program, of course, will be repeated at 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 10 o'clock this evening, and that's what we're talking about, the voice of truth. Good to have my longtime friend, Dr. Jim Burkett, here with us from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Dr. Jim Burkett conducts Apologetics on Fire conferences and churches, conferences, camps. He's developed curriculum. And in the process of two books that he is writing, and tell us about your books, Dr. Jim Burkett, and how people can invite you to get your materials, and also how they can invite you to do a seminar or conference, a workshop in their church.
The book that we're working on is basically, and I thank you for mentioning that, is that it's called Rescuing the Lost Generations and Restoring the Prodigals. And there's a subtitle, but the key issue is basically not only for parents and grandparents and church leaders to discover what is it that caused our young people to leave? Why did they leave the Christian faith? And once we understand what, from their vantage point, what's taking place, then what are the strategic steps that we can take to provide an atmosphere by which they can be reclaimed? And the two main aspects of that is going to be, first of all, an awareness of I say apologetics, but really knowing the factuality of the Christian faith. And one of the things I share with parents and church leaders is, we're not talking about that you have to have a master's degree or a PhD. We're talking about just basic things that everyone should be able to answer. And so the book is not yet ready, but we're working on that. And I think Dale Gentry is going to prophesy that it's going to be a bestseller. At least I hope that would be the Spirit of the Lord. We have not so much books as we have booklets, and we're redoing those that go with the courses that we teach. We have Apologetics 101, Introduction Apologetics 102, which is entitled the case for the Bible, and then the case for the deity of Christ. That's 103. 104 is Christian worldview that changes your world and transforms your culture. And then we have several others. But if anyone is interested in getting a hold of me, if you'll just send me an email at oklahomaschoolofapologetics@gmail.com. That's oklahomaschoolofapologetics@gmail.com. That will reach me. And also, if you or your church, to those that are listening, are interested in having a conference, for example, Dale, this happened in October. I was asked to lead a breakout session at a church gathering of 31 churches, and they said, we'd like for you to deal specifically with apologetics. And this was going to be in the afternoon, Sunday afternoon, and it was going to be at a local church there in Wilburton. And anyway, the pastor called me. He said, well, since you're going to be here in the afternoon anyway, won't you come early? Speak to a joint Sunday school, our Sunday school, and then speak to my worship service. So I did, and this pastor had never heard a presentation on apologetics. And so during the lunch, he looked at me and he said, Jim, I suddenly realized not only did I need to hear this message, but all 31 of our church pastors and churches need to hear this. He said, I'm scheduled to give the annual message this afternoon, but I believe God wants you to do that. Would you mind doing that? Wow. Well, Dale, took me about a nanosecond to get a word from the Lord on that. And so that's what was so interesting. So If anyone is interested, whether it's a local church, if it's a group of churches, the thing that I can tell you is that apologetics does three or four things. The first thing that it does is it will build up the faith of the Christian. I've seen people just literally grow in their confidence. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the number of adults who've had a sense of fear all their life, and they just learn a few basic things on how to walk in confidence, or if, even if they don't know how to answer a question somebody has, how to answer a question back.
Yeah.
And they're seeing results, and it's, and of course that's what's very exciting to me.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday morning, I'll be speaking at a large group of pastors in Oklahoma City, two breakout sessions on apologetics, and I was specifically asked to deal with what we've talked about today.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's any way I can help you, please, I just want to ask that you get in contact with me. And if anything, these are great days because no matter how bad it is, the Spirit of God is greater than the sin of our culture and the darkness of our age.
Yeah.
And Dale, I was speaking to several pastors, and I was telling them about the kind of atmosphere that we live in our nation now. And I told them the story about that this is a Manhattan Project season. And the Manhattan Project took place right after Albert Einstein sent word to President Roosevelt that the Nazis were about ready to develop the atomic bomb. And so when that happened, Roosevelt immediately got the proper leaders together, and all the necessary resources were given to see that that project was carried forward. So it went from Manhattan to the University of Chicago, and then they literally built an entire city from scratch in the early 40s in New Mexico, Los Alamos.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the atomic bomb was developed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was no doubt about it. So I tell folks, this is a Manhattan Project season. And then I share this, and I've shared for over 30 years now because I'm so intrigued by what they call the miracle at Dunkirk. And I know there's a movie that's out, and it only gives a glimpse of what should be done. But it was very interesting that on Sunday, May 26th, the British people understood, their king had said, let's make this Sunday a national day of prayer, because we're going to lose the bulk of our army on the beaches of Dunkirk. The Nazis are going to have surrounded them, and we have no way of getting them back. And so they prayed, and they asked God. They say the churches were so filled that there were more people at some churches standing outside than there were inside.
Yeah.
And then several things happened all in a row. One was that the stormy weather seemed to cover the airfields where the Nazi airplanes were in France. And then the rough English Channel, usually just very rough, this time was very calm for 9 days. And then the word had gone out that if you were an Englishman and you had a boat that was 30 feet to 100 feet and was motorized, then for King Country, would you allow your boat to be used? And so they talk about the Mosquito Armada, 850-plus boats of all sizes that went back and forth from the English Channel. Winston Churchill was told we might save 38,000. But after that day, Dale, they saved 338,000.
Yeah.
And so I look at our situation, and this is the time not to put this in the margins of our, oh, yeah, I'll get to that sometime. The time is now.
Yeah.
The time is now.
Yeah.
And so if I could just share one other story of the impact of apologetics, and I think this will really encourage folks. There's a story I entitled How an Apologetics Presentation in France Resulted in Revival and the Transformation of Great Britain. There's a guy by the name of William Wilberforce, and some of you have already heard about him. He grew up in a very nominal Christian family, really didn't consider himself a Christian. And one summer, he wanted to take his mother from Paris to the Riviera, and he was going to put them in one coach, his mother and his cousins. He didn't like to be with his mother because she apparently had the gift of gab. So he was going to go in another coach, and he got his old childhood friend, Isaac Milner, to ride with him. Hmm. Well, Isaac Milner just happened to be, at that time, considered the world's smartest man. He held the Lucasian chair of mathematics at Cambridge University in Great Britain. And so Wilberforce says, I started making fun of a preacher back in London. And I noticed that Milner did not laugh. And then, to my surprise, I found out he was an evangelical Christian. And so for the next month, I would ask him questions about God, about the Bible, about Christ, about prophecies and so forth. And this is what Wilberforce said. He said, everything that I thought was true, I find is false. And everything that I thought was false, I found was true. And when that happened, he surrendered his heart, his life wholeheartedly to the Lordship of Jesus Christ and committed himself for not only to do away with the slave trade and slave traffic, but for the transformation of Great Britain. And that's what happens when the truth of Christianity impacts our hearts and our minds.
Yeah. Dr. Jim Burkitt, it's been tremendous, tremendous privilege and opportunity to have you on. You are an incredible historian. You have so much information, and churches and pastors, and if you're not a church leader, you can encourage your pastor, a church leader, to get involved here in helping save our millennial generation. And of course, Dr. Jim Burkitt has ministered in so many, many places. Like Lakeshore Church in Rockwall, Texas, and Center Point Baptist Church, Wilburton, Oklahoma, St. James Methodist Church, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Heartland Community Church in Tulsa, New Beginnings Baptist Church in Tulsa, as well as Western Hills Baptist Church, still going back to Stillwater, Oklahoma, and a lot of other churches. So I encourage people to check on your Apologetics on Fire conferences, and it would be great for any pastor to have you in, and maybe any people group invite you. And I'm sure the people can just, you've given your information there, but if they just Google in Jim Burkett, B-U-R-K-E-T-T, I know that they can find out some valuable information. Jim, great to have you on, and send our greetings to your wife, Pam, and daughter, Deborah. We love you and love your family, and I believe that there is hope. And, you know, I talk about three things that we as Christians need. We need information, impartation, and revelation, and you have given us a lot of information, which we definitely need, and I have great hope. I have great hope for this nation. And for the church, that we're coming back to God, and a lot of it's going to start as we train our young people and train our parents, grandparents, and church leaders as well. Thank you, Jim, for being on today. Sure love you. Bye-bye.
Love you, too. Our pleasure.
Thank you.
God bless.
Thank you.
You've been listening to BPN Radio with Dale Gentry, your 24-hour internet prayer station. Tell your friends around the world to listen to this hourly broadcast as we pray for a revival in America, another spiritual awakening. Remember, as America goes, so goes the world. BPN Radio is sponsored by you, their loyal listeners and prayer partners. To donate to this network, click on the Donate button on our website at www.bpnradio.com. Remember that your contributions are tax-deductible. Tune in at the same time or any time, day or night, to pray with Dale Gentry.